sold me my first hen. Now I got 4 and 20 and 24 more again. I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay?
KRCB FM, Windsor, Santa Rosa.
It's chicken in the morning, it's chicken in the night. Weren't for chicken, Petaluma never would have reached its height. I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay?
Good evening, and welcome to Mouthful, the Wine Country's most delicious hour, as I used to say. And now, as I say, smart talk about food, wine, and farming, one of the many evolutions that I have started to put into play for our 20th anniversary. Mouthful will have been on the air 20 years at the end of October, planning some events, some parties, and some new features. Oh, did you stay cool this weekend? I didn't. It is really hot, isn't it? And you'll have to forgive my scratchy voice. I haven't been able to get the taste of smoke out of my mouth for several days. And, you know, we're all inhaling all those little particles coming down from Lake County. So I hope you've been able to make the best of it, as I'm trying to do. Drink more wine. Drink more beer. That'll help. We are talking about one of my favorite subjects tonight. For a long time, starting back in the, really starting back, if you include the whole North Bay, or the whole, actually, the whole Bay Area, we have had some of the best bread, not only in America, but in really the entire world. Here in the San Francisco Bay Area, what many people call the revolution in bread baking began with Acme in Berkeley, one of the many things that sprung out of the gourmet ghetto there, along with Chez Panisse and, oh, the charcuterie, the cheese plate. And after that, more and more bakeries began to appear. We had Della Fattoria, we had Artisan Bakery, and now, gosh, we have Nightingale Bread. So many fabulous bakeries. And one of them relatively new on the scene is Revolution Bread from Petaluma. And we have its baker and its maker here today on Mouthful, Eli Colvin. Did I get that right?
You did.
Okay, good. Welcome to Mouthful. I'm so glad you were available at the last minute.
Thanks for having me.
Lark wants to weigh in on the topic, too, I have a feeling. So, see, once I put her in a microphone, she gets quiet. So when did you start Revolution Baking?
When did I start it? A couple years ago. Mm-hmm. It was more of a side project. Originally, I was working for Model Bakery at the time.
Oh, Model Bakery over in St. Helena.
No, I was at the Napa, and the actual Napa at the Oxbow Market.
Okay.
That's where they do all the bread production.
So uh-huh. Yep, they're saying, yep, we like bread. And so you were doing both.
I was doing both. I wanted to start experimenting with more of these, you know, alternative grains and whole grains and mm-hmm. smaller farm. You know, it was just kind of getting a little tired and bored of what I was doing, you mm-hmm. know, and so I just wanted to experiment something else, and I just was doing it on the side. The original idea for me was to just kind of introduce a bread line for Model Bakery that was these style of breads.
Mm-hmm.
it's, you know, the ingredient costs, and it's just not going to work. You know, it's one of those things. And to try and add another line of bread to this huge menu.
To their bread, yeah. Yeah. They're a sandwich shop. They were in St. Louis.
It's kind of a cat. Yeah, they have a lot. And then just, you know, to run something on that level, it's, you know, the ingredient costs are something that's really, you know, you have to kind of keep your eye on. And
sure.
The stuff I wanted to use, I wanted everything that was the best of the best, you know. So cost to me, it wasn't really an issue.
Uh-huh.
So I just took it on for myself and just was playing around with it and started selling it on the side, you know, and just was, is more like I said, it was more experimenting and kind of working my way through learning, working with these different types of grains that have completely different than working with white flour and commercial flours and stuff that I was trained with and what I was used to using. So, you know, I spent a year at least with that, with just experimenting, you know, and using the public and customers as a guinea pig to give me a sort of feedback.
Now, were you doing that through farmers markets or through
Originally it started at Green String Farm in Petaluma.
Oh,
so I live right down.
That's why I know you.
So
okay.
That's, I live down the street from them. So I've been shopping there for years, you know, and so I brought it up to one of them once that I was making bread, and I just brought them in some samples, and they're really cool people there.
Yeah,
they're
just, yeah, it's a great place.
Yeah, it's an awesome place. I love that place. So they really were the ones that kind of gave me any sort of catalyst or start into, like, wow, you know, the public is actually kind of interested in what you're doing, you know. So I can never give them enough kind of thanks for, and I still bring bread there on the weekends. So that's originally how it started, and then it just kind of started getting bigger, and the more I did it, the less interested is being a baker for a bakery, you know, like model. Not that it's anything against model or anything, that's, I just wasn't interested in that style and that size.
Sure.
You know, there's too much compromise. I didn't want to use those types of products, you know, and I wanted to support smaller farmers, you know, kind of stick within the local community and the local farming movement and all that. So I just kind of decided to quit that and go for this full time, you know.
Okay,
so that started in March. So this has been full time this year, starting in March.
And do you have a storefront?
I don't have a storefront.
Yeah.
So just markets.
Farmers markets.
Yeah, markets and events. And then I'm starting to pick up some restaurant accounts and stuff like that. But it's a, you know, a big part of it is keeping it manageable and small. You know, I know what happens when you go down the other road. So if I do any accounts, wholesale stuff, it has to be with people that I like and that we can agree on, and we have a similar vision. And I want to support, and they want to support me, and it's kind of a communal effort. So, you know, that's kind of how it's going. But farm markets mainly right now is kind of what
I mean. So how do you, tell us a little bit about that transition from, I mean, you buy a huge sack of flour, and you make bread, you get some yeast, and you make bread. So you're doing it. And we've had Craig Ponsford on before.
Yeah, I work for Craig.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, right before Artisan was sold off,
that
was at the tail end of, you know, the good part of Artisan, as I like to consider it.
Okay, yeah, and now he's down at with Ponsford's place down
and
in San Rafael.
He's a friend and supporter, and he's giving me some guidance. He's a good guy. He's a good guy to have on your side.
Yeah, and he's
smart.
Bob Klein are doing all the work with Community Grains.
Right.
So he's sort of going in that direction.
And he led me into some of the flour, that the guys that I get flour from. So he was, so Craig's been you know, he's a great guy. And he's a true, you know, artisan baker, is if you want to use that term. But he's the real deal. And he's a helpful guy. He's a real supportive guy. So.
Yeah. So tell us about that transition and the differences. And
well, you know, the last bakery model, you know, it's, I was, you know, the production manager or head baker or whatever you want to call it. And it's just trying to keep the train from falling off the tracks, you know. I didn't really feel like I was much of a baker, you know, per se, that I was just trying to keep and hold things down and make sure everybody was getting what they needed and staff was staffed. And, you know, so it just became more of, I felt like middle management, and I wasn't a baker.
You have formulas, and you maintain those
formulas. Yeah, and you have to maintain a certain level. You can't go outside of these parameters. I want to bake the bread darker. The chef thinks it's burnt, but, you know, so I have to kind of appease the masses, which is not a possible thing to do, you know, and then especially when it's compromising my own personal view on how I think bread should be made, because I'm kind of, I've got, you know, I'm kind of a purist, and I've got my own personal take. And
okay, so how do you think bread should be made?
I think it should be made with good, clean grains, small farmed, you know, if you can. Try not to support the big monocrop.
So whole grains.
Whole grains. I think, yeah, long fermentation, whole grains, handmade, and, you know, it's, I don't think there's any one way to do it, but I do think, you know, for any of these guys that I admire and what I'm trying to do, there's got to be a touch of your own personality that's there. You know? So there's something unique about it.
So when you say whole grain, let's try to break it down.
Okay.
To buy flour, you go in the grocery store, you buy flour. That has been ground. It has been separated.
Right.
Everything has been separated out.
Right.
If you buy whole wheat, it's been recombined.
Exactly. So that's, yeah.
So what you're getting is the whole thing, the whole little berry.
Right.
After it has been...
been milled.
Oh, after it's been... Okay.
Yeah, so I get every... So it's not extracted at all. So the germ and the bran.
Okay, so it's already ground, though.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so...
So, yeah, and I have intentions to get my own mill, but that's another block of time I'm not sure I could squeeze in, and I don't know if
sure.
I could fit it into my shop right now, but my Mike Zakowski out in Sonoma's got a mill, and he's willing to let me come out there and use it, and he can show me some pointers. So I'd like to get it back to its real... you know, original roots of how bread was originally made, you know, work with farmers that grow it here and know what they're doing and do it responsibly and grow really, you know, you can tell the difference just in flavor when it's farmed properly. You know?
So, are you able to get any, is anything coming from Sonoma County?
There is some stuff. It's harder right now and I need to do a little more network. I'm so busy just trying to keep up. So I need to do, and I'm doing more networking with people. You know, and when you start talking with farmers, and we're all so busy that, you know, it's hard to reconnect. We get these plans and all, you know, so there is stuff around and it's available, but it's becoming more of a hot commodity. So, you know, it doesn't last very long. So I'm starting to run out of stuff that I have that I need to try and figure out how I'm going to get more here soon.
Because I know that, let's say, Canvas Ranch grows Faro or Emmer, if you want to call it. Preston. Up in Healdsburg. He dries some grains, but I don't know if he sells them.
I think they just use them themselves. And I wanted to go up there. You know, it's all the stuff that's on my list that I've contacted, and we know each other through phone calls and emails, but we haven't, you know, really kind of.
We all need 48 hours in the day.
Exactly.
So you have brought. You brought some breads, and we're going to do is we're going to take a quick musical break, and we're going to come back and start. We're going to start looking through your breads.
Okay.
Well, it's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies. With all the leaves on the trees are falling to the sound of the breezes that blow. You know I'm trying to please to the calling of your heartstrings that play soft and low. You know the night magic seem to whisper and hush, and all the summer light seems to shine in your blush. Can I just have one more morning dance with you, my love? Can I just make some more romance with you, my love? I wanna make love to you tonight. I can't wait till the morning has come. Yet I know now the time is just right, and straight into my arms you will run. And when you come, my heart will be waiting to make sure that you're never alone. There and then all my dreams will come true, dear. There and then I will make you my own. And every time you just travel inside, then I know how much you want me that you can't hide. Can I just have one more moon dance with you, my love? Can I just make some more romance with you, my love?
to shine in your place. Can I just have one more moon dance with you, oh my love? Can I just make some more romance with you, oh my love? One more moon dance with you.
It is Mouthful. It's a revolution of bread here in the studio. It is so gorgeous. Talking with Eli Colvin of Revolution of Bread. Before we go through these wonderful loaves, why the name?
Why the name? Okay, I get asked that a lot. First of all, I think it's, you know, it's essentially just a name. But I think it reflects my personal kind of personality. I think I'm a little bit more of, you know, I don't want to... I see a lot of problems in the food industry. I see a lot of problems just with the country in general. So I think using what I do as how to address it in any sort of kind of realistic way, I think taking my ability to make bread and trying to make some sort of statement, you mm-hmm. know. So I think, you know, and so this also started, it became more of a soapbox originally. When was it? Prop 237, when the GMO labeling law was on the ballot?
Right.
So this is all around that same time, uh-huh. and I was pretty fired up about that.
Sure. Changing the world one loaf at a time.
Yeah, you got to start somewhere. You know, sure. instead Absolutely. Of banging your head against the wall, yeah. just kind of taking something. It, you got to figure out some path and what, uh-huh. how it's going to, if it's going to do anything or not, I don't know, but mm-hmm. it's worth trying, you know, mm-hmm. I think. So I think it's that it's, and I know a lot of bakers, and we're all, you know, there's a certain personality involved with bakers, and mm-hmm. I think...
Now, there's the guy over in Sonoma.
Mike, yeah.
Mike.
Yeah, he's cool. He's a good guy.
He seems... If I had to think of two bakers that I would think had something in common, I would think the two of you.
Yeah, we have a lot of similarities. I mean, we definitely have our different takes on things. I think that we just both have a similar passion for the real sort of deal, you mm-hmm. know what I mean, and not faking it. We both... You know, I've had conversations of that moment when you're sick of working with white flour and you're kind of sick of that whole thing, you mm-hmm. know, and you've done enough for other people that you're ready to do it the way you want to do it, mm-hmm. you know. So, and he's got a very artistic eye. His breads are phenomenal, you mm-hmm. know, they're amazing. So, yeah, he's, you know, it's cool. It's funny that he's just, to me, he's just right around the corner, you know, so mm-hmm. we can hook up and talk and kind of, compare notes and, you mm-hmm. know, so.
Now, one thing I'm curious about, county regulations, that mm-hmm. sort of thing. I know that some people who want to start food businesses, it's a pretty high hurdle to deal yeah. with all of that. How I don't know how it is for bakers.
It's a little easier. It's still, I think, anything in California is a high hurdle.
Sure.
It's not sure. easy. But I think it's a little easier. I mean, it's because we're not dealing with anything that's, you know, that's going to create any sort of foodborne illness. It's all baked. It's flour and water, you know.
Right.
So I think it's a little easier with us, mm-hmm. you know. So I know some of my chef friends that do catering or have restaurants or do farm market stuff, mm-hmm. it's a lot more stringent and regulated.
Yeah. I mean, just some of the newer regulations for farmers markets. Yeah. And then even now, if you're going to do a cooking demonstration or something at, you know, Gravenstein Apple Fair, for example,
right.
you have to send in this list. You have to tell the health department all
right.
this stuff.
You know, it's the thing. It's, you know, I look at it from the standpoint that it's set in place to protect people, but some of it is just kind of ridiculous. You know, yeah. I have to admit that I'm like, what, are you kidding me? Come
yeah,
on.
It's managing, you know, the little teeny tiny things without the
and
big
some of
picture.
It's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just like, that's, you know, I think that's not an issue. And it doesn't always translate into anything. So some stuff I'm kind of like, well, you know, it's funny that you're able to cook on a street corner, you know, at a farm market and not have these stringent regulations that kitchens will have to, but there's really no, you know, so it's not a very, I don't know. You
yeah.
know, I've got my own opinion about
sure. it. Sure. But it's okay. I figured that the hurdles weren't quite as high.
No.
For bakers.
Yeah, because our risk is so low.
Yeah, because of what the ingredients
yeah,
are.
Yeah, our risk is low. Yeah. So there's not, yeah.
So tell us about these loaves, other than, I mean, you've just shown us. I wish you could see these. And we may have some photographs posted on Mouthful's Facebook page a bit later, because they're really, I've not seen signatures on breads like this. They're gorgeous.
Yeah, so it's stance. I mean, it's one of those things. It's, you know, it's the artistic side of me. I definitely do it because I think it looks cool, you know. Mm-hmm. But I also think that it does kind of give it its own personality that people recognize these breads. Mm-hmm. Because I don't change the stencils per bread. I mean, they're all the same stencils on the same
bread. And you should talk about, so it's a stencil that then you put rice flour?
Yeah, it's a brown rice flour. So I don't even use white rice. I mean, I don't use anything white in these breads.
And does the stencil go on before it goes into the oven?
Right before I bake it. So as I'm about to load them into the oven, I put the stencils on. Mm-hmm. So it's an extra step, you know. And then the more I do, the more you kind of start thinking like, oh, what am I doing? This is all this extra work. But I think that in a certain way, it's respecting the ingredients that I have even more, that I'm really taking my time, and also trying to give the customers that, you know, I have to charge a pretty decent amount of, I mean, these aren't cheap grains, you know, so
yeah.
I have to charge kind of a, so I think it's another addition that it's like, I'm trying to give you as much as I can, to,
sure.
You know what I mean?
So. How much are these loaves, are they 1 pound loaves about?
About a pound and a half.
Pound and a half. Mm-hmm. And one of them, and this is your classic logo, it's a fist holding three,
it's
holding some wheat.
Yep. So that's the logo that I've been using.
And then you have a decorated skeleton.
Yeah, it's like a sugar skull, so I'm kind of Day of the Dead sort of skull.
Yeah, and
originally that
my
was
my favorite holiday.
Yeah, me too. And I love the artwork as well, uh-huh. So I like that. And that really has no real correlation to the bread.
Uh-huh.
Originally, so that bread there, that's a sprouted croissant. A croissant's an ancient grain.
Mm-hmm.
I've just been experimenting with that over the last month or so. Mm-hmm. And so just my new experiments, just for my own personal kind of, you know, satisfaction, is that I usually put some sort of skull on there, and it's kind of like I'm letting the customers kind of be the guinea pigs again of like, all right, here's my new test bread, okay, and I'm throwing it out there. This is new, so it's, you know.
And then the other two are...
So this one on the bottom here is Emmer, and it's got the zigzag.
Oh, Emmer.
Mm-hmm. So
okay.
This is Emmer of the Faro. So that's a really, you know, fantastic grain. And this one on top here is one of my personal favorites, and this is Red Fife, grown up in Ukiah by Doug from the Mendocino Grain Alliance.
Mm-hmm.
And his grains, for me... are always top notch.
I know Red Fife. Is that a type?
It's Red Fife. It's an heirloom grain. It's an early heirloom grain from like the 1800s.
Uh-huh.
This is when they're blending grains to be able to, you know, grow in certain conditions, but mainly for flavor and quality.
Uh-huh.
You know, so it wasn't for how you can get the most yield.
Right.
Of,
the biggest yield. And when you make bread with Emmer.
Mm-hmm.
You mill that first. How does that work?
I get it milled right now, but I can get the berries, and I actually have some berries at the shop right now. But I need to go out to Mike's place and get them milled. So I get it milled before it, and then
yeah. And then once you have it milled, or ground,
however
in common parlance,
turned into powder.
Is the chemistry then fairly similar? I assume you have some water, you have some yeast.
You mean as far as the different grains go?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, they're all different animals. I mean,
okay.
You have to respect what they do, you know? And, you know, that's one of the more important things with bread baking is that you're not really in control. You just need to kind of figure out how to balance what it's going to do and how to fit it into a time frame that can work in a production setting or whatever, you know. So you have to let them do what they need to do and not force it is the key.
Mm-hmm.
Is that if you want it to do certain things, you can, but you're probably going to lose some quality in some level if you don't just allow it to kind of ferment the way it needs. It's nothing like drastically different, but texture and handling and, you know, the strength of it, all that is a lot different than straight white.
And is it mostly a matter of time that is the variable?
Time and hydration levels, which is really key. So I like to go really, really high levels of hydration. And I've had to pull them back because I'm just making more bread now, you know, so, and that affects fermentation time. So, I mean, I look at fermentation, the best way for me to kind of describe it is that it's basically decomposition. So you're trying to catch that little sweet moment of it's breaking down is what's happening, you know, so you're trying to catch it in that mode. So if you think if it's warm and wet, it's going to go faster. It's going to break down faster.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the environment's just, the conditions are set up for it to break down faster.
Uh-huh.
So heat and temperature's a little easier for me to deal with than overhydration. And hydration sometimes can be a matter of just a couple percents, you know, it can be a pretty small amount. You know, so the hydration level on the ancient grains is typically lower than when I use the wheat that's in the sourdough here with the fist on it.
Oh, this is a sourdough?
Yeah, and that wheat's grown down in the Sacramento Valley, so it's the same stuff that's with Bob Klein and stuff. They're using the same sort of... So, and it's a modern grain, but it's not this super hybrid, you know.
Right. Tell us about the sourdough starter.
It's just basically just you keep it alive by feeding it flour and water, you know. And I do blends. I've messed around with, using like little pinches of different ancient grains and just to see what the reactions are. So I've started using more of the ancient grains into the sourdough starter.
What did you originally start it with?
Just the whole grain wheat and
whole
water.
Grain wheat.
Mm-hmm.
So. And one of the reasons I ask is, you know, I often get inquiries from people who read my columns in the Press Democrat, and lately, you know, the movement towards whole foods and better foods really does have some momentum. And a reader this week said, you know, the hardest thing for her is finding sourdough. She just can't give up sourdough.
I've been getting
bread.
I've been getting a lot of customers with that, and I think it's you know, that's one of the things with people that have issues with bread is that I think is sometimes they don't quite realize that it's the process is a big, not only the ingredients, but the process. Mm-hmm. So a long, slow fermentation as opposed to something that goes from like a mixer to a bag in 6 hours that goes on the shelves at Safeway. Mm-hmm. You know, that's not, there's not a lot of benefit left in that. It hasn't been, you know, properly fermented, and it's not going to, the nutrients are, and so they have to kind of, you know, supplement it with a bunch of stuff and then put all these different conditioners and all these different stuff. If you look at the ingredient list on bag bread, it's like 25 ingredients, you know, or more. I don't know. And some of the stuff, I don't even know what it is. And that's to stabilize it. That's to give it shelf life. It's to make it so it's an industrial food product, you know. Stuff like this, it's flour, water, and salt. That's it. It's three ingredients. And the long fermentation and the hydration levels and all that, I mean, it gives a week's shelf life on its
right.
own.
You know, yeah, the shelf life of these breads is really astonishing.
Yeah, and the fermentation will extract the nutrients so your body can actually digest it. And so it's not going to, it won't spike your blood sugar like white flour and those other and make you crash and make you feel lethargic. It doesn't have any of those sort of effects. And it's just the old way we used to make fermented food. I mean, it's really just the old techniques is all it is.
Do you think that there, and I talked with Craig Ponsford a little bit about what I'm going to say next, this whole thing of gluten, this and gluten intolerance. Do you think, have you noticed in your exploration of antique grains, ancient grains, do you think there's a correlation between the modern, highly processed
I do, but I can't say I feel one way like for sure. I do think industrial food across the board is bad, you know. I think, and I'm wondering that maybe just our whole food system and the way we've been, you know, eating food for the last, you know, last 30 whatever years, you know, longer, since it's kind of come into this big industrial kind of thing that
post-World War II.
Yeah, exactly. Once we figured out how to put this stuff into the marketplace, that I'm wondering that if it's just an accumulative effect of all these different things that we're putting into our body. And so then when people eat bread or grains or whatever, that's kind of being triggered by these other things. So I do think I don't want to use like the new modern industrial crop grains personally, you know. I don't, and it's mainly, I don't trust it, but I don't trust any big corporate food.
I am with you.
So, but I do know, I can tell you from my being at a farm market and on the kind of the front lines, I mean, I get questions daily, you know. That's one of the biggest things I get discussions with is wheat. And, and I have had, I don't know how many customers that come to me that miss it and have given up bread and completely turned their back on it, but they'll still come and look and talk. And so I'll kind of give them my take on it, and they'll take it home and they'll not have a reaction.
Yeah, that, you know? Bob Klein of Community Grains and then Craig Ponsford, they were exploring that with some scientists, saying it seems that, you know, there could be mounting evidence that
it's starting and there's some scientific data that's starting to back that up.
Right.
So I don't think it's, and it, to me, it just kind of seems like common sense. But
yes.
I had a recent customer, and this is something I was kind of, you know, I was pretty happy and like, just I thought was cool. It was a woman that came to one of my markets and she had given up bread. I can't remember. I mean, it was at least 10 years she hadn't eaten bread. She gave it up. And so she listened to me, she talked to me, and I gave her my, you know, my little lowdown. And gave her some bread, and she came back the next week, and she was, oh, my God, I had no reaction. So I'm going to give it to my son, who hasn't eaten bread in 25 years.
Wow.
And so they came around, and I just saw her recently, and she was like, you know, if I ate too much, I started feeling, and I was like, yeah, well, you know, if I eat too much ice cream, I'm going to have
exactly too much of anything, you're not going to feel
so,
right.
Yeah, you just don't eat too much, you know. But if you're not having a reaction, that's a pretty good scientific,
absolutely.
So, you know, I think there is a correlation to grains, but I think also fermentation time is really important.
It's really key. Mm-hmm. So on your, let's take your sourdough. That's the one closest to me. What is the fermentation time on that?
Everything, I mean, if I don't include the time that I you know, when I build the starter for it, which sits, you know, about, I usually like to keep my starters that I feed into my doughs pretty young. So they're, because the whole grains and these grains get really acidic real fast. Mm-hmm. So you got to hit them kind of young. Otherwise, it gets a little too tangy for me. So that in itself is about 10 to 12 hours, depending on temperature and all that sort of deal. Mm-hmm. But as far as the dough goes, it's between 24 and 32 hours.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I give it a what's called like a bulk fermentation on the floor, so in ambient temp. And so I mix everything by hand as well, so I don't use an industrial mixer or anything like that. I just mm-hmm. and you pretty much just incorporate the flour and water and salt.
what kind of salt do you use?
Right now I'm using pink Himalayan salt. Mm-hmm. So I try and, you know, use whatever I can. And I was lucky to find a good connection of somebody that's local that has a bunch of that salt that I can mm-hmm. get at a decent price. Mm-hmm. You know, so I try and, you know, so gray salts and whatever salts that I can get. So, and I don't know how much of a real, you know, effect it has. I can definitely feel the effect in the dough when I use the Himalayan salt, mm-hmm. but I also know that there's, you know, it's the mineral content is so low that it's pretty insignificant, mm-hmm. and there's trace plutonium that I'm reading about this, so that's like, oh, okay.
Trace plutonium.
Yeah, so that's the thing. Customer brought that to my attention, so I did some research on it, and it was the same thing. It's like, you know, it's the amount of what's in there, minerals that are in the salts, and that are so low and insignificant because you're not eating that much, it's probably mm-hmm. fine, but it's also kind of like, mm-hmm.
yeah, it's like the cyanide in a peach pit.
Yeah,
you gotta eat several thousand peach pits.
Yeah, exactly. So, but I, again, it's, you know, I use, it's all filtered water. It's all, everything I do is I try and do it just the
filtered
best.
Water that you filter, you have a filtration?
I don't have a filter, so I have to fill up water bottles before I go to work every day.
Gosh.
I'll get it. I mean, that's an extra step, but I feel uh-huh. like it's what I'm doing. You know, it's, I don't want to dupe anybody. I want to feel completely honest and comfortable.
Sure, absolutely.
You know, and when people ask me a question, I can answer it honestly and feel like I can stand behind it, you know.
Sure. So. If I make bread at home, I don't use water out of the tap.
No, it's going to affect it. Because,
Well, I have Sebastopol groundwater, which sucks.
Yeah. Well, when I was up in Napa, we had a water filter there, and we had some issues with it, and instantly when we had to try, and you could smell, like, it smells like, you know, like swimming pool water up there. It's mm-hmm. like chlorinated. Mm-hmm. You know, instantly you could just see it within just an hour of mixing pre-ferments that the pre-ferments were getting ruined. You know, mm-hmm. so you can see the water is not something you want to just kind of have a throwaway ingredient.
Yeah. If you have three ingredients,
make sure they're the best.
They're really important. Okay, are we going to taste some?
Sure. Which?
We have sourdough here, and then we have emmer.
So the emmer's here, and then this is the sprouted Khorasan. So I have
Khorasan.
That one's good. It's really good. It's a real creamy, sort of nutty. All the ancient grains aren't as bitter as modern wheat. They're a little sweeter and nuttier.
Mm-hmm.
So they're all really good, but they have, and the flavors in these things it's real subtle. But you'll pick them up as you kind of take more and more mm-hmm. like bites of it. So mm-hmm.
and then that one is red. The red five.
The red five. Yeah.
Okay. So whatever.
I'll cut into the sour first here.
And you said that, you know, they're not inexpensive. What do your loaves sell for?
The sourdough, the ones that I don't use any or much of the ancient grains, I sell for $7, and then mm-hmm. the ancient grains are $8. So, and then the baguettes, of course, on baguettes that I'm making right now are $5.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, some people are a little bit like, but it's like, man, if you saw what the actual ingredient cost in this isn't counting the labor, you know, that you're actually kind of giving a deal. And the more I can buy, the prices will come down. I mean, that's what we just have to go through. We can bring these prices down as long as they're, you know, people want them more. But I'm seeing more and more customers, just especially even over the last just a couple months, that are starting to recognize some of the ancient grain names that didn't
uh-huh.
just even recently. I'm like, oh, einkorn, I know what that is. And I'm like, well, see, cool. We're starting to do some research, and we're starting to see, you know. So mm-hmm. I don't have to do as much explaining that people are kind of looking for this. Oh, I've been looking for einkorn bread, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So.
This has a nice tang to it.
It's got a, you know, it's trying to keep it balanced. Whole grains, that was the big hurdle in the very beginning for me, was to figure out the balance of acidity. You know, it's mm-hmm. super tangy mm-hmm. and it goes fast, and it's, you know, that's why a lot of people that use whole grains tend to spike it with a certain percentage of white flour, just to mm-hmm. try and tame it.
See, I like the tang.
Yeah, me too.
It's
got to have a balance to it, but a little too much, I mean, there's that tipping uh-huh. point, you know, but it needs to be sour to where you can taste it's got mm-hmm. a sour tang.
How do you prefer to enjoy your breads?
I eat them straight. I like sandwiches. I love sandwiches.
Uh-huh. Nothing wrong with it. I love sandwiches.
You know, occasionally, like, really good cheese, but I think, you know, wherever bread will fit into a meal, I mean, mm-hmm. it's something.
Because this just makes me, this piece of sourdough, oh, I just want to slather some freshly made butter on
right.
it.
Right, and that's what a lot of customers say. And yeah. really good cheeses are really well, especially with the, like, the harder, like, darker ryes and the stuff that mm-hmm. may be a little more intense than people are used mm-hmm. to
I here. Tried your rye mm-hmm. at the Forestville Farmers Market.
Oh, you did?
Which, yeah.
I make a few. Was it the one that's like the California rye I was calling? It's kind of more of a deli style. It had caraway in it. And
I don't think it had caraway.
Was it just the big hearty round?
Yes.
One? Yeah. So that was a new experiment. That was with Doug's Grains.
That was really good.
So a lot of I like that stuff. And I was yeah. surprised that I fed it to the first night I was experimenting with that particular batch of rye that I got from Doug. So it's kind of a blend of mm-hmm. some purple barley, that rye, and then mm-hmm. a little bit of wheat. And then I put a little bit of Chardonnay grapeseed flour in it. And I thought it was going to be pretty intense, but I gave some to my six-year-old son, and he was like, this is actually pretty good. So when you get a thumbs up from your kid or something that yeah. hardcore, you're like, all right,
absolutely.
Cool.
yeah. And so your son loves these breads?
He does.
Yeah, you know? Good.
Well, he's grown up on
what's his? Yeah, exactly.
He's
what's his name?
Jackson. He's my oldest. So,
uh-huh.
Yeah. And then my youngest, Holden. So, and, uh-huh. you know, that's they've kind of grown up with dad uh-huh. doing this.
So they know what real, they know real bread.
Mm-hmm.
So they probably can't stand that other stuff.
They don't, you know, they don't mind. You know, I'm not a super, you know, uh-huh. in a pinch, you know, that it's, you know, okay. But yeah, they prefer this. They this mm-hmm. is what they're used to. You
good.
Know? Yeah.
It's really good. The sourdough's lovely.
Oh,
it's
good.
Really lovely.
Yeah, I'm glad, glad you like it. So that's got a little bit of the rye from Doug up.
Mm-hmm.
Just to that's just to mainly give it a little bit more of that tang, you know,
mm-hmm.
add to the sourness to it.
How many loaves do you make a week?
Ooh, a week, that's, I don't know. It's kind of all over the place right now.
Okay.
I'm trying to get it to where it's, I'm not just saying yes to everything right now,
mm-hmm.
you know. I don't know. 600, I guess.
Okay.
Maybe.
Okay.
Maybe. Okay. Okay, sorry.
We're going to take another quick musical break here on Mouthful, and we'll be right back with more talk about is it Revolution Bread or Revolution Bakery?
Revolution Bread.
Revolution Bread and Eli Colvin. That sourdough has a nice long finish on your palate.
Yeah, so that's the other, these other grains too as well. That's one of those things you'll notice. And I was talking to a winemaker that, you know, it was an interesting conversation about that. That it's, you know, you get the first kind of initial, you know, hit of flavor that's sourdough and it's bread and it's all recognizable, but then these kind of lingering nuances and notes that kind of pop up.
You know, and you can the. It's much more of a, there's a much more toasty quality.
Yes.
You said you like to take the crust darker.
I like to bake real
and
hot.
That's and that's really nice.
Yeah. So that's the thing. So a lot of customers will look at it and think that it's burnt when it's not. To me, it's like...
got to look on the bottom of the bread.
Yeah,
see if it's burnt.
And you got to smell it. And you can, you can taste it. Sometimes I've gone a little too far, I admit. But, you know, and it's a caramel. It's the Maillard reaction. It's just caramelizing. Mm-hmm. So it brings out so that kind of nice toasty flavor to it.
Mm-hmm.
But it looks dark and it's not recognizable to a lot of people that are used to going into other bakeries or stores and seeing this real kind of anemic looking bread that I'm like, to me, doesn't even look palatable.
You know? And one thing, we are so lucky in this area. We have such good bread.
Yep.
I mean, even if it's white flour, I mean, we have fabulous breads of every
in
kind.
Comparison. And you know, Acme's a good example of going that large and keeping it good. And so Steve Sullivan, when I first started, he was like the rock star.
Yeah.
You know, not that he isn't now, but he was the guy when I first started. You know, and everybody was like, man, Steve, you know. And so just to see that, and I've seen his bread and I've tasted his bread recently, and it's like, yeah, nice job, man.
Yeah.
You know, and you've got, and I've been down to check out his you know, it's been a while. It's probably been more than 10 years what his production facility is like, but it's big. It's
I went down when they were installing one of the new wood burning ovens that I guess they brought it over from Spain.
Right, the one that rotates?
Yeah. With the guy was there. They were just building it. Yeah. And so I watched that process for a while. It was pretty amazing. Yeah. But yeah, he's managed to keep the quality.
He's one of the few, in my opinion, that's really pulled it off.
Yeah.
Level and still demands and deserves a lot of respect.
So I haven't bought, you know, major commercial bread in. Well, I guess I do when I go back to visit my daughter in Mississippi.
Right.
And there's no option.
Right.
But we really are lucky here in Sonoma County, in the Bay Area in general, to have access.
All the food that we have access to.
All the food,
You know, so we're kind of, you know, we're kind of in that little mecca zone, and it's good to have a lot of progressive minded people that get it. You know, I'd like to see it's expanding outside of, and it's getting more of a broader appeal across the United States right now, farm markets, and starting to see that, you know, the slow food thing or whatever you want to call it is kind of really grabbing hold.
It was interesting. You probably saw, it hasn't been that long ago, in the Press Democrat, there was an article about how money spent at grocery stores has now fallen below money spent at restaurants in Sonoma County.
Right.
But what they didn't factor in was, well, has some of that money that's being spent at grocery stores, has that shifted to farmers markets?
Yeah, I think it has, because grocery stores are starting to do in their marketing. You know, their Safeway's going after more of a local thing. I got approached by state Safeway executives at the Santa Rosa Farm Market a few weeks ago. Yeah, and they're from down south, and it was like, no, I mean, but it's still, it's showing signs. I think a lot of these grocery stores are starting to, you know, I don't know how much they're being affected. I think that they're also seeing that there's a market for it.
Yes.
So I just always a little dubious of anybody of like, that's cool, that's really cool, but it's better just go ahead and go to the farmer's market and support the farmer that's actually growing your food.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Now, how many farmer's markets do you attend throughout the week?
I am doing 5 right now. I'm considering adding another one, but right now I'm just throwing it all kind of out there and doing more than I probably should, just to kind of gauge, you know, what I should be doing and what I'm capable of doing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, ideally I'd like to just have 1 or 2 farm markets, and I could do those nights, and I could be the person at the farm market stand. Right now, a couple of my markets, I have somebody work in the booth for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's just what needs to be. And she's awesome. She's been with me since the very beginning, so she knows, and she's a great personality, and she knows she could answer the questions too.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it was one of the things that I had to kind of make a decision on of, you know, what's realistic, the amount. I mean, when I first started doing this full time, I mean, I had days that were 48 hours, you know. It's just, it's not sustainable.
Good.
And then
that
I'm also
not
not probably not the best representative at a farm market at that point, you know.
No. So you do, I know you do Tuesdays at Forestville.
Tuesdays Forestville. So at Tuesdays start out with Petaluma, the East Side Market in Petaluma.
Oh, the morning, okay.
Yeah, I do that one in the morning, and then I drive out to Forestville after that at Cork's Winery and Restaurant on Tuesday. Saturday, I do the Santa Rosa
The one at the Vets building?
The one at the Vets building, which has turned into a really nice market from what I remember years ago. It's really turned around. There's a lot of good vendors. It's a nice market. And then after that, I go to Walnut Park in Petaluma on Saturdays. And then Sunday, I do the West End Farmers Market in Santa Rosa.
Oh, great market.
Yeah, that's my favorite market. It's a tiny little market, but it's got the best personality, the best vibe, and it's a cool location.
It's got great, really dedicated customers.
Dedicated customers, and it's just a nice look. That's where the original farm market in Santa Rosa was, I think, back in the 1800s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, it's like the original space.
Yeah, and it's right there with a great park.
Great park, yeah, it's a cool. It's
great
a cool
dog park, one of the best dog parks in the Sonoma County.
Yeah, it's a cool area.
Yeah.
I love it.
So you've got five markets, but they're on 3 days, so that's
They're on
great.
3 days. So it's I'm working all the time just because of all the prep and long fermentation.
Fermentation.
So I start Thursday night for Saturday's bakes, basically.
Okay.
So I do that. And then I'm considering doing the Windsor market on Saturday Sundays as well.
Sundays.
So I don't know, you know. I just want to check them out and see, so it's...
Sebastopol is a great market, too.
Sebastopol is a good market. I think that there's already somebody else there. I mean, that's the tricky thing.
Right now, Raymond's Bread is there.
Yeah, it's tricky when you have a lot of bakers around, and I don't want to encroach in anybody's, you know what I mean?
So we've got to kind of... Yeah, Raymond's hasn't been there that long.
Yeah.
For a while, it was Full Circle.
Yeah.
But now it's Raymond's, and I'm not sure. They might alternate.
I'm not sure either. I contacted them in the beginning of the season, and I haven't really followed up on it. Mm-hmm. But I know it's a nice market. But I'm pretty busy now, so I'm not feeling like I'm, But I would do. I just want to test the waters everywhere I can. I'd like to get down to the Bay Area and Marin. I'd like to get into more of that. Those farm markets. So.
Oh yeah, you have to do more than 600 loaves a week.
Yeah, that's a different game. I know.
Yeah,
that,
that's really
they're
huge.
Good markets. So,
yeah. That made me forget what I was going to say. 600 loaves a week. I know. Restaurant accounts. Are there restaurants now that are carrying the bread?
Well, yeah. And there's stuff that's in the works right now. I work a lot with Feast Catering, so they use my bread a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a new restaurant down in Oakland that I'm pretty excited about, called the Grand Fair, that's opening up. It just did a soft opening, I think, on Thursday this week, and they should be opening up next week. So it's like a market restaurant, and I think kind of the market side of it is that you can kind of get your ingredients or prepared parts of your ingredients or dinner and take it home and make it yourself. So it's Doug Washington's the guy that's opening it up, and he's got a list of pretty nice restaurants, and he seems like a really cool guy to work with, and his vision and mine are... You know, he's, you know, kind of a hot shot, but he's a down to earth, and his vision is realistic, and he wants to use this sort of, and he loves our bread. So, I mean, it could be good. You know?
Cool.
Yeah. Very cool. So, and then right now, Naked Pig in Santa Rosa has a special with the rye. Well, not that rye that you tried, a different rye. They're doing a special with it. So, and Fatted Calf up in Napa. Mm-hmm. We're trying to, a lot of this stuff is a matter of, how do I get it to
logistics?
These
sure, yeah, absolutely.
And so that's where we're. And so I talked to the owner of Acre yesterday, and we were kind of coming up with some ideas. But again, and he understands delivery is the issue.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But he's a super cool guy, and I like their business, and I like their business model. So there's somebody I would consider to working with, even though it would involve more work than profit or anything, you know. Mm-hmm. It's something I'm willing.
Yeah, I remember when Catherine Weber was starting out. Yeah. You know, Della Fattoria, baking her bread, and then driving over to. I think her first client was Sonoma Mission Inn.
Right. I mean, that's what it takes. This is the one I have help with some of my farm stands, but I'm the dishwasher, I'm the packer, I'm the delivery guy. I have to pick up my ingredients. You know, I do it all. So it's a lot of work. You kind of prepare yourself for what you think it's going to be, and then once you kind of start doing it, you're like, oh my god, and then you realize there's still more for me to do. I'm still not getting it all done. So,
what type of oven do you use?
I have a Bongard. It's a French style oven, and it's a modular, and a modular is a good style oven for somebody in my size, which is it's actually electric. So, but it's a French style oven, hearth oven, it's a bread oven, and Bongard's a fantastic company. It's a really and I was lucky with that oven is that I have a friend in Arizona with his bakery, Noble Bread, that just upgraded to a bigger oven, and I had this one, and we'd been talking for a while, so he sold it to me for a great price.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so it was lucky. I've been a lot of luck and a lot of support.
A lot of things fell into place.
Yeah, and a lot of good people that have just been so supportive that have made this all kind of pan out.
Cool. And then when we were playing the music, Mike, Mouthful's fabulous engineer, was talking about the black bread that he's eaten in Russia.
So, yeah, rye is one of those things. I think you talked to a lot of bakers, we all love, most of us, I'd say, you know, 99% of us, are, uh-huh. we love this stuff. But it's kind of a hard sell in the States. It uh-huh. freaks people out, and it's a little heavy and dense, and, mm-hmm. you know.
If you've never been to Russia...
And experiment. I don't think anything I do is traditional in any uh-huh. way.
But
I
mean, how can you describe it to somebody who doesn't know that bread?
I mean, it's maybe like it's a big kind of funky looking doorstop.
Okay. So it's just like that really dense,
it's dense,
heavily rye.
Thick rye mm-hmm. flavor. It's got that kind of, you know, that real kind of earthy rye flavor.
You want some fresh made sour cream and...
It's nice with some kind of rich, good cheese or something uh-huh. like that, but it's nice on its own as mm-hmm. well. And some people... just love it, you know, mm-hmm. and other people are it's just not their thing. So, and it's a really trick, and so when I make it, you know, I use the grains that I get from Doug up north, and you know, those are not cheap. So if mm-hmm. I make it, I make a pretty small amount because I know there's not going to be a lot of people that are mm-hmm. doing, but then there's those people that are there and they come by every week looking for it, mm-hmm. you know.
So. Yeah, I think you got another one here. Okay, we've got just a few minutes left. So what could we look for in the future? How do you see the next several months shaping out?
I think I've learned right now is you just got to kind of adapt and go with the flow. I think the main thing for me is to make sure I don't lose my original idea and vision and think I can go beyond what I'm capable of doing or getting to a point to where I need to start hiring. I mean, I just need to keep it.
You want to keep it about.
I need to
like
maintain what it is, but I need to figure out that work-life balance as well.
Sure, you need to spend time with your boys.
I need to see my kids. That's really, yeah, it's a big deal. So right now, it's just trying to maintain course and figure out, you know, I think once this season, the market season kind of starts to slow down in November, I'll have a second to actually breathe, mm-hmm. you know, and really think about maybe what the best thing I should be doing as far as the amounts I'm making, where it should go. And, you know, it's mm-hmm. all got to be stand up and it's got to be legitimate, but I also have to be realistic. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm balancing. It was, you know, started out as a vision of everything kind of, you know, anti-corporate food and supporting the people and doing the best, you know, most work I can and making sure everything was delicately handled and handled properly. And, you know, but there's also a reality of like, man, some of these grains and my profit margin is like, I'm gonna sink my ship if I keep going this route.
And so you can't do that.
No. So I need to be realistic. And it's just a matter of learning. And I have a lot of friends that are in this business that have a lot of pointers. So it's mm-hmm. just a matter of just keeping my head straight and clear and just not getting too grandiose with any sort of thoughts, you know what I mean? Just maintaining course, keep it small.
If people want to get in touch with you with questions, like to be contacted?
I have a phone number, but I also have, I do have a website and I'm working on, that's another one of those things on my list to finally get done. So that's, okay. But I also have a Facebook page, Revolution Bread. You can message me on there. You know, okay. The thing is, and I do want to, and my email, you can email me at revolutionbread.com@gmail.com.
revolutionbread@gmail.com.
Yeah, that's it. And okay. Then, I do have to say, I typically don't answer emails or voicemails and stuff until Wednesday. It's the one day that I actually have time that I can take some time. Sometimes some of these little things that are, you know, special requests that happen, I'll try to get back to you, but don't feel like I'm ignoring you.
Oh,
if I don't
sure. No, you are busy. And your bread, thank you so much for taking time on a Sunday. Really appreciate it. Your breads are absolutely gorgeous.
Thank you.
Gorgeous, gorgeous. And I'll put something in one of my next Fresh Flower Farmers columns. I'll be sure to let people know which farmers markets your breads are available. I also wanted to tell people that if you have apples in your backyard, your neighbor's backyard, that might go unpicked or unused, the community apple press at Luther Burbank Experiment Farm is open for throughout apple season now. It's a free service. You are able to take up to 5 5-gallon buckets of apples for each time you make a reservation. That's about 100 pounds of apples, and they will press it for free. You also need to bring some sort of jugs to hold the juice. You can go on Slow Food Russian River. It's slowfoodrr.org and to make you do need to have a reservation, but every weekend through October, they are running this free service. And I know that there are so many apple trees that go unpicked. So try to get yourself some nice fresh made apple juice. And on that note, on that note, it is time to say goodbye again, and we're gonna start up the weekly book giveaway. It was just too hot. I couldn't think. It was too hot to do it today. So meet me back here next week. With luck, it will be cool. Say thank you to your favorite firefighters and have a great week. Thanks for listening to Mouthful, Smart Talk about food, wine, and farming here on KRCB-FM.
Grapes are covering the grassland. Buying up for family farms, selling out, who can blame them? Wine's a cash crop growing strong.
Support for Mouthful on KRCB-FM comes from members and from the North Bay Bohemian, published every Wednesday celebrating the community, the arts, and the music scene and in the North Bay and online at bohemian.com. You're listening to KRCB-FM, Windsor, Santa Rosa.
I'll be gone.